Hello and welcome to the DeFi Daily, a 10-minute or less DeFi and crypto update. I'm Amy, here with Pat, and today is Wednesday, October 28th, 2020.
Bitcoin's down about 3.85% from yesterday's high of 13,850 to 13,263. ETH is down as well off the high of 405-ish yesterday, down to 391, about 3.81% down. So both down about the same amount, both down off of yesterday's very nice highs.
Thank you, as always, to our sponsor, Bitwave. Bitwave is a digital asset management platform that does DeFi investment monitoring, token tax tracking, gain loss reporting, and more. You can check them out online at bitwave.io or on Twitter at Bitwave Platform. Okay, up first, so Ripple has a new partnership with Flare Finance, which opens DeFi markets for XRP.
Flare is a longtime Ripple partner, I guess would be the right way to phrase it. They are a cross-chain solution that was always built from there. They have a token called Spark that was built to interact with Ripple. And they've sort of moved on to the next level, which is to basically do a cross-chain token with Ethereum. And then it looks like they're also starting to bring a few DeFi protocols that they themselves are building over to the Ripple ecosystem. I think it's already weird that Flare Ripple is already a very programmable, very fast contract, albeit with its own set of issues around centralization, things like that. I mean, Ripple is not designed to be Bitcoin. Ripple is designed to be a central bank or at least large bank settlement layer. It is designed to be very, very bank friendly. So that was kind of interesting. There's going to be a lot of people trying to play in this space. I think there's something to be said for Ripple's approach. You know, banks are not going to be able to do that much on Bitcoin and Ethereum because it is kind of the wild, wild west. So they are going to want to find better ways to operate on it. Ripple may be one of those solutions. I tend to think we're going to see more banks just doing, basically taking Ethereum, forking it, making their own Ethereum chains with the constituent bank players, and then using all the current existing DeFi or what, you know, basically using the existing open source stuff that's been written to DeFi to start implementing their own protocols within the banking infrastructure. I don't necessarily think it's going to be someone like Ripple that really wins. I don't think that there needs to be a third party here. I think that most banks have relatively large IT departments. Those departments tend to have people that are interested in this type of technology, and they're all working on this stuff. Ethereum is really one. What always makes a difference is developer productivity. I mean, really, you could say anything you want, but the amount of stuff that people are programming is directly related to the adoption of different platforms. That is always how it works. So the fact that there's so much code written out there for Ethereum, there are so many people compared to other platforms, there are so many more people that know how to code for Ethereum and are getting good at the security considerations and all of the terrible, like tricky stuff with it. It's hard for me to imagine that banks aren't going to be, you know, Ripple's done a great job with partnerships, but it's still hard for me to imagine that banks aren't going to just straight up, you know, fork, you know, do a Ethereum fork for a lot of their projects. So cool, interesting stuff, but I don't know, not necessarily a huge game changer.
All right. So next, the 7-day rolling average of Bitcoin's hash rate has dropped by 10% since last week.
This is so interesting. I don't know if I totally buy. So I definitely buy that the hash rate has dropped. The block production time has gone way down. They're anticipating a 11% drop in the difficulty, which is in about a week or so. There'll be another difficulty adjustment for Bitcoin. So the high level point of this article is absolutely true that there's a difficulty. I know this yesterday. I was trying to send some Bitcoin yesterday and it was taking forever to hit the blockchain because blocks are just freaking slow right now. The reason that this article said that it was happening, which is possible, although it's super interesting. The reason this article said it was happening was two things. So one, a lot of Bitcoin mining happens in China. A lot of it happens in China. That's a combination of there's a few different reasons for that. One is they got into it pretty early. Two, they're, you know, a lot of Chinese companies are the ones that are making the silicon. So if you're making the silicon, you might as well just mine itself. It is a good business to make the silicon for a miner and sell it. It's a better business to make it for yourself and then hold on to it. Like there's, it's kind of why like NVIDIA is looking at doing cloud solutions and things like that with their GPUs. And so that's why it tends to be in there. This article says 70%. I think that's relatively high. I think it's closer to 50%, maybe 40%, somewhere in that range. But you know, it's very well that could be possible. The reason that this article asserts that the hash rate has dropped is because the rainy season in China is dropping, is petering out. Miners are having to move from renewable, really, really cheap renewable sources to fossil fuels. And when they do that, they basically just turn off, like their profitability models change. And a lot of miners just turn their rigs off until the next rainy season when they can go back to hydropower. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if there's a chance that is equating to a 10% dip, but it is absolutely true that, you know, Bitcoin mining, cryptocurrency mining is essentially just a giant game of international power, you know, kilowatt price arbitrage. So it is definitely conceivable that a seasonal shift causes this kind of drop. And you sort of see it before in the similar time period. So that's a high level. That's why it happened. The difficulty adjustment should kick in within a week or two, which will mean blocks will go back to being produced at a pretty good clip. There's also a very real argument to be made that this is why the price of Bitcoin went up. This essentially 10% less mining means 10% less bitcoins per day getting mined, which means 10% less. Most miners very, very quickly turn around and sell their Bitcoin. They don't sit on it. Most miners are basically, you know, they are selling their Bitcoin to pay for their mining operations. So if you lower that price 10%, that means there's 10% less supply in the market. And that would be a direct response why the price of Bitcoin went up. So a lot of this stuff is really interconnected and it's super easy. And there you go. Maybe it's because it's not the rainy season in China is why Bitcoin price went up yesterday.
And that article, we will tweet a link out. You can follow us at the DeFi Daily on Twitter. Okay, next. So an article came out, a new report came out alleging that most DEXs are unsafe. Pat, what do you think?
Yeah, this was a report by a group called Hacken. That was and Sir CER. The high level was, so they tried to take a very holistic approach to analyzing how safe a DEX is. They looked at both, you know, they looked at a lot of factors such as, does the DEX have a bug bounty program? What is the liquidity? How much liquidity are there on the DEXs? Do the DEXs allow you have some of the normal security features? Like, do they allow you to, set a time limit for your trades? They also had some weird stuff like, you know, well, they said the report itself said cold storage. Does the DEX support cold storage? Which was already super strange because cold storage generally refers to, they were using it to refer to hardware wallets. Cold storage really generally refers to totally offline, like paper wallets. No DEX supports paper wallets. But even when it's like hardware wallets, basically every DEX supports MetaMask. MetaMask supports hardware wallets. It's a very silly metric. So there was some stuff that was like really interesting. I think having someone do a holistic look at liquidity across DEXs is really valuable. Like where you run into the most issues with your liquidity is where you have, or with DEXs kind of, you know, poorly operating for traders is when you have low liquidity. So looking at liquidity and judging based on that is good. They did stuff like looking at how frequently the audits were and if they were taking notes about audits. And I think that's generally good as well. And then pumped out a number. I would take it with a grain of salt, but all that being said, they said Uniswap was the most secure. So that's great. I think Uniswap probably is the most secure and they put the most amount of effort into this. But they also, it was obviously a kind of bias. They are trying to sell their auditing services. So that's why they pushed out the report. And it didn't really ever speak to the quality of the code or other things like that. It just said, was it audited? Did they have a bug bounty program? Which I think is a little bit on the fluffy side. So, but it's cool to see people doing these kinds of things. I think we'll see more and more ratings of this happening. And I'd like to just see more consistency brought to it and deeper thought. You know, whether or not they work with hardware wallets is not particularly interesting compared to, you know, what are some of the types of exploits and how are they protecting against arbitrage attacks and flash loan attacks and things like that, which are arguably much bigger issues.
All right. Well, that'll do it for today. Thank you, as always, for listening to the DeFi Daily.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one.